understand that you were born here.
Yes.
And will you tell us a little bit about what Dibble was like when you were a child?
Well, I was born here, and I lived here until I was 8 years old. And
what day were you born? What was the day?
October the 19th, 1900. And I was the oldest child of four. I had a brother and two sisters, and we were born to Minnie Arrington and Isaac Miranda Green. He was from Alabama. Mm-hmm. And we lived in Alabama for a year, and the panic came, and so we panicked back to Dibble. They went into a furniture business. Mm-hmm. And all we that I remember most of that is some beautiful furniture that I still have. The dresser, that was a great big dresser that I dressed before from the time I was eight until I married, and after my mother's death, it's in my cherished home now.
What was in Dibble back then in the early
1900s? Well, the big thing that I remember mostly is the church and a lot of the people. They were small, but the church was the center of the activities in this town, and that's the way it was even through all through the years until Dibble began to grow along about in the, I would say in the 40s, and began to bring in more people, and the older people began to die out, the old settlers, and then we began to have other churches, and we just had one store and called the commissary, and in the beginning, and then finally Mr. and Mrs. Holloway put in a store up from Dibble, and that was a big hassle. When I came back here from college one summer, she asked me if I'd like to work. And I didn't. Half the time she was chasing off down to the Dibble office with a sack full of checks. That was paper money. And she was making, they weren't supposed to cash them, but she could buy things with it. Mm-hmm. So she bought feed. And as she'd go down, she's always on the high horse about those checks. And she'd wag that great big bag, you know, because people liked to trade with her. She'd have the things would be marked one price. And those of us who tried to help wait on the customers would offer, they'd say, no, we'll wait. Let Mrs. Holloway wait on us. And we knew why, because she always knocked down the price and never sold it for what it was marked. And so therefore, we felt a little bit insignificant because it wasn't much that we could do. And she thought nothing of asking a woman to pick up a sack of feed and put on a truck. And my father, she was first cousin of my mother's. My father knew that, and when she wanted me to work, and I needed the money too, I was still going to college just between terms. But he said, well, I'd rather you didn't work that. But he said, now I want to tell you, the first time that she asked you to pick up a sack of feed and put it on a wagon, you tell her that I said that you could do that, and she may want to send you home. So that really happened to me. And I told her, and she said, well, I should have known that's the way I grew and feel. But I never carried anything heavy. I never lifted anything, put anybody's wagon. I worked 6 weeks, I believe, and I had to go back to college.
Well, did you go to school here in Alabama?
I started in Alabama. My birthday being the 19th of October. And you had to be 7 years old then on before the first day of September. So therefore, I was not eligible to enter the public schools until I left school then started sometimes, you know, the last of September. But and I really started school when I was just within a week of being 8 years old when I started in Birmingham, Alabama. And then I came back here and went here 1 year in school. And Miss Cindy Massengill who is Ms. Barkley now in the nursing home, was my teacher at that time in the second grade.
Oh,
she's still living. Mm-hmm. I have a beautiful letter that she wrote me not too long ago. Well, when she moved in some little house and all, I bought some things for her to go into her home, and she wrote me a beautiful. She's a real Christian woman. But I can remember that I had that 1 year in Birmingham. I had a little more advantages than some that had used so much of the time, which didn't please some of the children. She would have me standing in the back of the room singing some of the songs or saying some of the poetry that I had learned in Birmingham school.
Mm-hmm.
But I did go then, and then I taught here. Then we moved to Huntsville. I guess I went to school longer than that. That year with Miss Seamus, I did. I was in the fourth grade when we moved from here.
Mm-hmm.
Entered the fourth grade in Huntsville.
And you
public school.
When
and then I came back here after the World War.
Mm-hmm.
And I taught here 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I taught here in 1919. I taught in Bryan first. 19 and 20 and 21 and 20 and 22, and then I married that summer.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did before you taught. You married?
No, I married at the end of 2 years, 19 and 22.
Would you tell us again about your courtship and your marriage to Clyde Thompson?
Yeah. Well, I could say that it was quite different. The mores were different here among the young people and all. A lot of them on Sundays would meet the train, watch the train go through. But my father, I never wanted to do that. But I had one sister who would have liked to have done it, but my father wouldn't allow that. And then there was not anything when the first week I was home, they had a picnic, and I went to the picnic, and I met Clyde there. But I had already met him in a way, because I'd go to the post office. My boyfriend was in the service, and I'd walk into the post office, and by the time I'd passed the office, Clyde was right to my side. In those days, he was jerking up his pants every minute, you know, fixing his pants, and very flirty guy. And I wasn't used to that kind of thing. I was used to college boys. But anyway, when I went to this picnic, they had chaperones, and we sat around and talked, and after a while they wanted to play Ed Prudon was there. You don't really know Ed or not. Ed was manager at the time, at one time, and he was an officer now. Ed's a real good friend of ours. But and Bernice Hines was there, and Ed, and there was quite a few young men, and Clyde. But I had, because we lived in the country, as it was called at that time, and right now it's part of Dieball. I told Mama that I just wouldn't come home that night. I didn't want to walk through the woods and I knew one of the boys was going to bring me home, and I didn't want to walk through the woods with them, or with a boy. And I'd stay with my uncle. He was more aged and was one of the druggists. In the Southern Pines grocery store. And so aunt says, "Well, I know who'll bring you home, be Clyde Thompson." I said, "Well, that's not the one I want to bring you home." So at this picnic, they had a bonfire. And they began to play games, and one of the games that they played was going out west. And of course, I had played going out west in our living room in Huntsville with a mixed group, and I played fruit basket turned over.
What kind of game is going out west?
Well, he'd say, what do you do, Carrie Wisdom? And everybody was doing care of something. And then, after a while, they'll say, what are you going to do with it? And this and that. And I learned for the first time that it wasn't safe to play every game in a mixed group. And I said, and I got a little bit embarrassed, and I got up and left the group and walked out to the bonfire. And because that's the way I'd been taught, that you just didn't make an issue of things, but you just didn't participate. And so while I was out there, one of the boys came out, and I thought that he came out there because he didn't like the way the game was going, the things they were going to carry with them and what they were going to do. And so the next the next time we had a meeting and party. But Clyde did take me home. And carried me to my aunt's. I didn't go home with him, carried me to my aunt's home, and I spent the night with at my aunt's
and you said you dated him every night for years. What did you do on dates?
Just sit, watch anything, when they had the theater. Yeah. I went on I dated him back. I was home about a month, and I went to my school in Brown. And I wrote to him all that year. And then when I came home, I came home for Christmas. And then I came home the next year, and I didn't take a place at the school in Brown. I wanted to come home. But you had to have a year's experience before they take you here. And so about the first week I was here, before I had time to make application, I was asked by the president of the board, Mr. E.C. Durham, and Mr. Will A.G., if I would take a place here. So I became a second grade teacher under Mr. Gaines, and then next year Mr. H.B. Stigall, who was a veteran principal and superintendent in this county. And then at the end of and then all during those 2 years that I was teaching here, I was dating every night. I'd date every night, unless I had to go to the lodge or something like that. And many times, we'd have a date, and he'd send a note down. See, there was no telephone. He'd send a note down, and he'd be a little bit late. He was going to have to, the telephone wires was down. He was going to have to run the line to see what was wrong. And see, they call him a stenographer then. Mm-hmm. But anyway, those are the things, you know, everybody's, anything went wrong, of course, Mr. Walker was the superintendent then. He was a good friend of Clyde's and a good friend of mine, everybody. But we dated every night, and there was not many boys here. There was nobody, the only couple. That was left when I started teaching here, that knew was Gloss and Bernice Hines. And they married at the end of the first year I was here, so that left Clyde and I by ourselves. And all we had to do for entertainment those years before I married here was just go to the air dome to the show. And that didn't last long because they sold it, and I found something, made it into a restaurant and tore it down, you know, and somebody else did. Anyway, there was no entertainment like a theater or a picture show for years. But, and then we'd walk up and down the railroad track. Mostly, though, I got tired of that. And we'd just go to Sunday school and church and prayer meeting on Wednesday nights. And then come home and just sit and talk. And but I remember that, and I said to touch a card in my background was just like reaching your hand out for the devil and saying, come get me. And I said, when I went on that first party, picnic out at the lake, when I got there a little late because my mother had broken her leg and she was ill with that. But when I walked up, they were sitting in little groups playing cards and playing Old Maid and something like that. Very mild. But to me, it wasn't mild, because I was just taught that touching a card, even looking at a card, was sinful. My grandmother was awful strict, and I never played basketball. My teachers were just, and I loved to play a ball. We'd have a little tennis ball and play at school, and they just couldn't understand why I wouldn't play basketball. But the reason was I'd have to wear bloomers. And my grandmother didn't believe in bloomers. And I never had a pair in my whole life. And so I didn't play ball, but I wouldn't tell them. And I didn't resent it. I thought what she thought and what she wanted was just right and good. And
she
I
let was, you go swimming? Could you go
swimming? No, I never had on a bathing suit until after marriage. I was embarrassed to death then. And crawled down with that and got me a dark place to get in. Nobody, and then they all filled in there, and I tried to, and that was at Sylvan Beach. And everybody's around, I think, well, they'll go on their way after a while, and I can get out. But, and I'll have to tell you this, though, about that bathing. I had a bathing suit, and, of course, and then we, I don't know what, I guess it was about the first time, and Clyde wasn't too proficient with swimming. He could swim, I couldn't. But not safe enough that you felt that he could save you if something happened to you, because he hadn't had opportunities. There was no swimming pools. And he started working here when he was 16, and he didn't participate in those things too much, didn't have an opportunity. But anyway, we had on our bathing suits, and we went into the water early. And he had bought some water rings, had two pairs of water rings. So he had those with him. And we were sitting on the steps that you go down to the water at Tilling Beach. And the waves, of course, was very shallow at first. And we were sitting there talking. And Clyde took a pair of his water rings and tied one of them on his big toe. And about that time, here came a great big wave, and I looked around, and Clyde was gone. And all I saw was the water wings with the toe hanging on to it. So I reached out and caught a hold of the water rings and pulled him over to the steps. I saved his life. Many years after that, I told him I wish I had not reached out and pulled him in. But
where was that Sylvan Beach?
Well, that was the big playground in Houston, out from Houston. Mm-hmm. And that's where we spent our honeymoon. We had a little, they had little cottages, and that's where we spent our honeymoon there. And then they, that was all disbanded. But they do have a Sylvan Beach again. Mm-hmm. And we went by there one time when they first opened it, but I really don't know. Oh, that Sylvan Beach was a big thing in those days. They had a band.
Excuse me, can you tell us about the wedding, your actual wedding?
Oh, well, Miss Barrington, or I believe it was Mr. Barrington's niece, had married in this Methodist church. 30 years before, there hadn't been not many people had church weddings in those years. But all my life, I had planned to marry in the church, because my mother and father were married in the birth church. And that was a big event here in Dyball. And we married on the 25th of June, 1922. And since then, we had our golden anniversary celebration at Fair Acres, which was a big day in our lives. And one of the girls who was in my wedding, I think we had, seems that there were six boys and six girls. And in addition to my brother, who gave me away, instead of my father. He didn't want to. He didn't want to participate. He just, it wasn't that he had any objections, but he just didn't want to participate. And my sister was, made of iron, yeah, made of iron. And Lucille Wise was, and Dot O'Hara were the Flower Girls, and little cousin of mine was Ring Bearer. And there's quite a few of them who've passed on since then. And it was a very pretty wedding. We, of course, we, our minister wanted us to know this service by heart. He wanted us to know it. He was going to ask the question, but he wanted us to know it. So he said some men got excited. So Clyde and I sat down there for a week or two saying that ceremony between us and memorizing all of that, you know. And there were no highways. It was just building the highways between here and Livingston. And they called them jitneys then, a Ford for my uncle. And we used that on our honeymoon. We left here right after the service. About 3 hours after then. And we went as far as Livingston. And it took us all day to get from Livingston to Houston. All day we had to go over, ride a ferry, and it was hot. And I had bought a beautiful suit and coat, and that was my going away. I wore it hot. And so we got into Sylvan Beach that night about 1 or 2 o'clock. And then we had sent Baby had to furnish the sheets and things, and it hadn't gotten there. So we went to bed on the mattress with nothing on it. And we had moved on a month, I believe. But there wasn't a whole lot to it. But I often think about communication. Young people today go and they're just in the middle of doing something all the time. And they have to be entertained. But after they marry, I notice this, they're just as stable, maybe more than we were. Mm-hmm. And they make good wives, they make good husbands. But we had plenty of time to tell everything we knew and everything we thought of the future. But I'm not sure that you don't start from scratch when you get married. It's just like everybody else. It's up to the individual to make the adjustments. And if you've had ideals and things, you hang on to them or you fight for them. But I do want to go back about the cards. One Wednesday afternoon, Clyde sent me a note, and we had a new family that had moved in here. They were older than us, but they were still young. They were still having their, they had one child, and just a young child. And he sent me a note and said that they were having a party that night at such and such a time, but he told them that he knew that I wouldn't miss prayer meeting, that we'd have to come after prayer meeting. And of course, that was just like when I had a roommate in Huntsville after we moved back here, and I stayed on with high school. And one morning it was just pouring down rain, and the water just running down that same Houston hill. And I was getting ready to go to Sunday school, and my roommate never went to church or Sunday school. And she said, "I see you're not going out in this weather, are you?" And I remember to this day how shocked I was that she thought that because it was raining that you just stayed at home. You didn't go to church or Sunday school. But I said, "Yes, I'm going, so I always go." But So, of course, we went to prayer meeting. At prayer meeting, we went on to the party. And when we walked in, they were playing poker. That was my second introduction to a deck of cards. And I looked at them. You know, they were so engrossed in that game, they hardly knew when we came in. So I sat down against the wall, and I don't remember if Clyde sat down with me or what. I can't remember. I had to get my bearings. But I said, as I sat against the wall, I was sitting where one of the best poker players and was looking over his shoulder. And after a while, I got so enthused over the game, I got over there, got me a chair. And he kept it with a lot of persuasion from him. So I got over there, they pushed down, and I got placed pretty close to him. So I was just playing, never had touched a card before in my life, and I was just winning over that, and it was so fascinating. Next night when Clyde came down, he brought a deck of cards with him. So we didn't possess a card table in our home, and I was president of the young people's organization in our church, and it was just about time to make a report. So we were sitting on the floor playing Old Maid. Or I know we weren't playing Old Maid, we were playing poker. We had some matches, I remember. And about that time we had a gate, of course, and we had an old-fashioned lock on it. And I heard the gate, opened the gate, I heard the thing hit. And I said, "Oh my goodness, Clyde, that's the preacher. He told me he was coming by here to pick up my report." But we grabbed those cards and we began to stick them under the rug, hiding them. All this happened just within a few months that we had been married. We were sitting there, and the preacher was, and he's the one who married us, Brother Melvin. We were sitting there, and I looked over there, and there was two cards sticking out from under the rug. So I couldn't remember what to talk about, anything. When he left, I went over and picked up the cards and rolled them up, gave them to Clyde. I said, "Put them in your pocket. Don't ever bring them down here again. Anything that's wrong for a preacher to see is wrong for us to do. I don't want to never see another card." And we were on our honeymoon. Clyde had some cards in his bag, but he never took them out because he didn't touch them. But I think of a lot of things that I'm not sorry. I'm proud of the way I was reared. But I realized that I missed a lot of good times by not doing the things that others were doing, and I still wouldn't have been doing anything wrong. I don't think it would have been wrong to play the poker with the matches and or penny. But I said then later, after I was married and after Donald was born, there was not even a bridge games in Dabo. One was being organized, I was invited to come down that day it was organized. But I explained to her that I didn't believe in all of that. It was right for other people, but it wasn't for me. That I was too tied up with my children, with my home, with the activities at the church, and I just didn't have time. And therefore, I really never in all my life have learned just how to play. I've always been a part of studying, presenting studies in our church all during those years, and then teaching. And those 2 years before I married, and then I was supposed to talk the next year. And we went down and bought our furniture, and I was going to help pay for the furniture. But they had a rule that a married woman couldn't teach. So they told Clyde about it before, and Clyde told me while we were on our honeymoon. Well, there was all that furniture that we had bought. But anyway, when we came back, along, and school had been going on 2 weeks here, some boy did something wrong, and the principal of the elementary school. I started down the aisle to reprimand him in some manner, and he jumped out of the window. Mr. Davis jumped out the window after him and broke his leg. So in those days, when you had a broken leg, you went to bed with it, you stayed at home. So for 7 months, I was elected principal of the elementary school. So that took care of the furniture bills. I made $25 more than Clyde was making at that time. And so when I'd get my paycheck, I'd walk over and pay for the furniture. In fact, that whole year, I didn't spend one penny on my wardrobe except a pair of silk hose, $3.50 to go to a wedding. And